You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, hello, listeners. This episode is coming out on December 25th, 2016. So if you are a Christmas celebrator, I hope today is full of joy and not too much family drama. I love that this episode is coming out on Christmas. It is me being joined by two other amazing sex educators fielding a few of your questions. So it's my little Christmas slash holiday gift to all of you. I also just want to take a moment to say thank you so much for listening, for your tweets and Facebook messages, for all of your emails and compliments and feedback and questions. I love being connected with all of you and creating this for you, and it brings me so much joy. And I'm super excited about 2017 and, of course, featuring some of your confessions. January is going to be the first month where I feature listener confessions on the show, and the theme is firsts. So you can go to sexgetsreal.com for this episode to see all of the guidelines for submitting your own confessions. You can either record your own story or write it out, and I will read it for you. Each month in 2017, there will be a different theme, so I would love your confessions about firsts. They can be as short as you'd like them to be, all the way up to about 7 minutes. And I think it would be really fun to hear some other perspectives and experiences and regrets and hopes and dreams from all of you to get you as part of the show. And I also just want to say a huge thank you to Hotels by Day for sponsoring this episode and being so generous. Of course, if you need a little escape from all of the holiday madness, or you need a place to recover on New Year's Day after your New Year's Eve, Hotels by Day helps with day stays. So if you're looking for a day stay for a little spa getaway or for a little afternoon of writing or a sexy little hookup, you can use SGR5OFF as a discount code to get 5% off your first day stay through Hotels by Day. The rest of this episode is me chatting with Kate McCombs and Louise Boucher. We talk all about women in sex tech. We talk about empathy. We answer several of your questions and have a good old time. And I hope you enjoy. So enjoy your holiday season, and I will talk to you next week. This is a very special episode because I'm not joined by only one guest, but two guests who are superstars. So first with me is Kate McCombs, who's been on the show before. So welcome back to the show, Kate.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be back.
And unlike last time when you were, I believe, in New York, calling into the show, this time you are all the way around the world and down in New Zealand.
Yes, I'm so excited to be down here. I'm in Auckland at the moment, teaching with my professional soulmate, Louise Boucher.
Who is also here, and I want every single person ever who's interested in sex education to know Louise. So welcome to the show, Louise.
Thanks, Dawn, and thanks, Kate. Hi, welcome. I mean, thanks for having me to the show.
Oh my gosh. I love that the two of you are in New Zealand and we are able to connect through the power of technology to have this amazing sex positive conversation and just like literally take over the globe.
Yeah, it's great living in the modern era. Yeah.
One of the things that is so charming about the two of you, because you do a lot of teaching together and you call each other professional soulmates, and we're going to be answering tons of listener questions today because the two of you are just such skilled and compassionate sex educators. But what's fascinating is how the two of you met. So Kate, do you want to share that really sweet little story of how the two of you came into each other's worlds?
Absolutely. I love telling this story. It's one of my favorite stories to share because it's like our little meet cute. And you know how Louise entered my life. She completely changed my life, and how we met actually relates a lot to what we do professionally as well. So Louise and I both did our Masters of Public Health with a focus in sexual health at the University of Melbourne in Australia. And I was about I was about a year into my program, and I was teaching a workshop for the university student union. They were running a sex week. It was called RAD Sex and Consent Week, and I got hired to teach a workshop on female pleasure physiology. And so I was in the middle of this workshop, and I got to the point in my workshop where I was talking about the importance of a strong pelvic floor and how that relates to orgasm and overall pelvic health. And one of the participants in the workshop asked, you know, how do you kind of upgrade your pelvic floor workouts? What can you do to kind of take that to the next level? And I said, well, you can get these weighted vaginal balls that you can wear around in the vagina, and then the power of gravity can help you do this vaginal weightlifting exercise, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I don't actually have an example of what these look like. And then I see this hand go up in the back.
Da-na-na.
And that was Louise. And completely unprompted, she pulls out these Kegel balls, these Fun Factory smart balls out of her bag.
Out of my bag, I might emphasize.
And so about half of the audience was sort of alarmed, just like, where did she pull those out of? And the other half of the audience was sort of intrigued, like, oh, that's what those look like. You know, was this an intentional setup? Was this a planned part of the workshop that they're, you know, tag teaming, that they, you know, this setup that the audience, you know, has these Kegel balls already ready to go. And so needless to say, it was a very memorable part of this workshop that, you know, even before we had ever met, she was supporting me and educating and answering this participant question. So we didn't actually get to connect after that workshop. But then a couple months later, I was in this public health leadership and management class. And during the tea break, I was just standing there drinking a cup of tea. And this unbelievably radiant and confident woman waltzes up to me and just looks me in the eye. And she's like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. I was in your pleasure physiology workshop. I was the one with the Kegel balls. And I was like, oh gosh, of course I remember you. It was very memorable. And then she delivers the best friendship pickup line I have ever heard in my life. And she just looks me in the eye and says, I reckon we should start the revolution. And I just looked at her, and like the rest of the room fell out of focus. And I just said, yeah, that sounds fantastic. And I felt so, I felt totally professionally and platonically seduced. And it was wonderful. And very soon after that, we started teaching workshops together. And it was unlike any co-teaching experience I'd ever had before. We just have a rhythm and a rapport that I'd never had with anyone else that I'd ever shared a stage with. And it's just been this really fruitful professional and personal relationship ever since.
I really love it when you tell that story. However, there's one detail I want to add, which is the reason why I had those smart balls. Because otherwise it could be a little confusing. So the reason I had those smart balls is because I was teaching a sex toys workshop that day. It was part of like a student week on sex and sexuality. So that day I was teaching a workshop on safe sex and a workshop on sex toys, which is why I had my swag of Silicon Wonders.
Although it wouldn't have been incongruent with you as a human being to just happen to have sex
that's true.
In your backpack.
That is true. That is true. But honestly, teaching with you is one of my favorite things to do as well. We've had such a great time, and like you've been such a mentor to me professionally, and as well as like a colleague on the same level, you've also been a mentor and really shown me sort of the way in the sex education world. So it's been really, really great for me connecting with you over the last 5 years.
So Louise, I know that a lot of what you teach has to do with sex and pleasure and communication. What are some of your kind of like key workshops that you really love teaching to people?
Good question. I most enjoy teaching classes like female orgasm, or classes that have an anatomy and physiology component, as well as bringing in some tips around like how to communicate about sex, because I find that a lot of people still don't know the true size of the clitoris, for example. There are lots of misinformation about the G-spot or around how desire and arousal is, you know, supposed to work, or how it's likely to work for people. So I still find that's my most powerful work, is the work around informing people about sexual pleasure, particularly female pleasure, although all types of body sexual pleasure, and with that kind of anatomy and technique and physiology focus. That's the heart of what I really enjoy doing. But I also love teaching about those communication skills. How do we get what we want sexually, and how do we interact respectfully with our partners and playfully, and how do we use language and emotional literacy to have satisfying relationships and sex lives?
And you just got, mine has not arrived yet, so I'm deliciously jealous to have seen yours on video recently, but you just got a 3D printed clitoris, isn't that right, of the internal structure?
Correct. I'm glad you're delighted you saw my clitoris on video.
And the full internal structure, no less.
Yeah, so recently I received this amazing 3D printed clitoris from a friend of mine, or a friend of ours, Linda.
Yeah, our friend Linda Kirkman. Yeah, she's an amazing sex researcher in Australia.
And it's such an amazing little tool. We used it in the workshop that Kate and I taught a couple of nights ago in Auckland. So we were explaining things using the vulva puppet, which we'd done many times. And then I also was able to pass around this terrific 3D printed life-size clitoris, which is such a terrific addition to my teaching tools.
I cannot wait to get it. People have no idea until they actually see it just how much delicious real estate there is in a vulva with like pleasure potential.
Real estate, that's such a great term, yeah.
And Kate, you have been teaching your tea and empathy workshops, which I have experienced some versions of the tea and empathy, and I've also worked with your empathy cards, which are amazing. And I would love for you to tell everybody a little bit about what you do with that workshop.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's so this workshop really, it came out of me in kind of a surprising way. I started teaching this empathy workshop in my apartment in the middle of essentially a health crisis. So about 3 years ago, my migraines that I'd had my entire adult life went from being something that I had a couple of times a month to something that I had every day. And so I went through, you know, there's this really overwhelming period of time where I was in absolutely chronic pain and I could barely leave my apartment. And I was just noticing how the people in my life, many of them were able to really communicate with a lot of empathy toward me about what I was experiencing. And other people, I could tell they really wanted to support me, but really struggled to communicate empathically. And I realized, oh, you know, I know this skill set. This is something that I teach within kind of the larger framework of sex and relationships education. Maybe I could build a little workshop around this that my friends and their friends might enjoy. And so kind of even in the midst of all this pain, I developed this little workshop that I did just in my apartment because I could control the sensory environment there. Like most, I was so sensitive to light and sound that I couldn't really leave my apartment, but I could do it in my apartment. And so I decided to call it Tea and Empathy. I did it in the middle of the afternoon. I had people bring snacks and I made tea. And I developed these workshop with these cards that have feelings written on them. And the way the workshop works basically is that everyone, I do a little intro talk about what empathy is and what it isn't and about how we're taught to support people and often the strategies that we are taught about what support is often not what actually is most conducive to connection. We're taught things like how to give advice, and often this advice is actually unsolicited and unwanted. But what empathy actually is, in my view, is about being curious about and non-judgmentally engaged with somebody else's emotional world. And I think this is such an important skill set in order to establish real connection with people. But we're taught that our value is actually to fix people or to shift someone else's emotional state when in fact that's not actually what really drives connection. So in the workshop, we talk a little bit about that nature of empathy, what it is and what it isn't. And then I get people into small groups where everyone gets the opportunity to share a little bit about something that's emotionally challenging for them. And then using this deck of cards that I developed, they actually get to practice doing kind of empathic inquiry, like asking empathic questions about what that person was feeling in that situation that they describe. And then they actually get that experience of feeling that empathy from a small group of people. And then they take turns. And it's really powerful to get to witness this process and have people be really present with your emotional experience without trying to change it or offer you advice in any way. And I've been getting some really amazing feedback about it. And I've been doing it with now that my migraines are better managed and I'm participating in life more fully, I'm getting to do it with all sorts of different groups. And it's been really interesting to see how that's been landing with people.
One of the most powerful things for me about that deck, in even just being able to be more self-reflective and more patient with myself is how it gives me the opportunity to not only name the feelings that are difficult, but then you also have all of these emotions that are easy or more enjoyable to sit in, and you get the opportunity to then explore what you would have liked to have felt around that. And I've felt so much spaciousness around painful experiences in being able to, like, if I'm feeling frustrated and, you know, unheard and judged, and I wish that I was experiencing or would have liked to have experienced patience and confidence and ease, you know, it's amazing to actually have in front of you this very concrete visualization of what I am feeling and what I would have liked to have felt and how to move towards that the next time, and to give myself that permission of being able to, like, play with my emotions instead of feeling like I'm stuck in them and there aren't any other options.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea of kind of playing with emotions, because I think we can spend a lot of time resisting our emotions and trying to force ourselves out of them, which I think is a really counterproductive process, because then we can just kind of be fighting with ourselves internally. But I think that idea of play and just having a more gentle approach to our emotional landscape can be a really great first step in practicing more self-compassion, which I think leads us to a lot more joy and a lot more ease with our whole emotional world.
So the two of you together are kind of just like this amazing, like, bundle of energy and laughter, and, like, I don't even know, the conversations that the two of you have that I've had an opportunity to be a part of have just been so, I don't know, like, I feel like I level up when I'm around the two of you.
That's a lot coming from you, Dawn.
Seriously.
Well, thank you. I love how, Louise, you've got this kind of, like, technical anatomy, pleasure, sex education-based approach, and then Kate, you have this, like, communication, empathy, compassion approach to sex and relationships, and how the two of you have now married that. And you teach these workshops that bring the best of both worlds into a single experience for people. Like, what an enriching experience for people who come to your classes.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's so kind of you to say.
So, Louise, I know that you were in the States for a couple of months over the summer, and that while you were in New York, you went to Women of Sex Tech with Cindy Gallup, actually, from Make Love Not Porn. And I read on your blog that it was women talking about technology and sex, like vibrator development and sex apps and things like that. And I would love to know a little bit about what you experienced there.
Absolutely. So Kate has also been to Women of Sex Tech events, and we'd hoped that we would go to that event together that night. But as Kate's already mentioned, she gets migraines, and she had a migraine that night. So I ended up going to the event by myself. So I'll tell you what I did, but Kate might also have some bits to add from her other experiences of attending. So that night, it was just really cool because there were all sorts of different women there who work in sex and sexuality field, but in this kind of precise part of it, which is the technology part. So what's so awesome about New York is that it's so big that it can house these very specific micro communities. So, for example, in New Zealand, where I'm based, there is a bunch of people who are interested in sex and sexuality, but you might have, you know, what constitutes a community might include sex therapists, people who work in sex toy retail, sex educators, people who work in sexual health promotion, and that might kind of feel like the community. Whereas in a city like New York that's so big, you have all these tiny, well, not tiny, but like these quite specific subgroups that can form where you have a viable number of people to make that a community. So in New York, you've got enough women who are not only involved in the sexuality field. Okay, not only are they women involved in sexuality, but it's also that technical aspect. So that was just so cool for me. There were people there who ran podcasts, as an example of sort of sex tech work. There were people there who designed sex toys and ran sex toy companies, like Dame Products that has the Eva and other vibrators. There were people there who ran websites that were about like dating or connecting websites. People who ran websites related to pornography, To Make Love, Not Porn, of course, is a pornographic, sort of, what's the word, sort of real porn, I think they call it, project. Mm-hmm. So it was just really cool having all these people who were not only super knowledgeable in the sex field, but they had all this area of knowledge around technical stuff that I didn't have as much knowledge in and I was super interested to hear about. But they were just these really ambitious and capable women doing cool business things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was my experience. I was just like, wow, it was really cool to meet people. And thanks. I'm always grateful when I'm in the US for having a New Zealand accent because it means that otherwise I might have just blended into the background as somebody with not a lot to contribute. But everyone's kind of like, oh, where are you from? What's your accent? So even in that context where I didn't necessarily have a sex tech thing to bring myself, I really enjoyed the conversations that I had, and people seem to enjoy connecting with me and hearing about how my, you know, my piece of the sex ed puzzle fits in too. So yeah, it was a really cool event.
You're being so self-effacing and antipodean. Like,
am I?
Yes, you're like so fascinating and amazing. And of course, like, even if you had an American accent, you'd be the life of the party. You're amazing at parties.
Well, I was wearing my best shirt, so now I think about it, there were lots of amazing guys.
That clinched it, that shirt. Well, we talked through a ton of listener emails, and I want to make sure we have time to get to a bunch of them because I love both of your perspectives so much on so many of these topics, and I want to know if the two of you are ready to, like, jump in and roll around in some of these questions.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I would love to. Yeah. We can triangulate. not just me and Kate, but Dawn and Louise and Kate can triangulate.
That's Whoa. Right. Between the three of us, we've got it. or we will pretend like we do. All right. So this first email is from someone named Hannah, and the subject line is sexually frustrated. The mm-hmm. email says, since moving in with my boyfriend about a year ago, our sex life has diminished greatly and is only getting worse. At this point, we only have sex once a month, and I'm so sexually frustrated. I don't masturbate because it doesn't do anything for me except turn me off. But of course, he does masturbate. And sometimes I just need the touch of another human being. I'm a very sexual person, and the physical connection is so important to me. In my frustration, I find myself so horny every day that I'm even starting to fantasize about other men, and I'm curious about being with a woman. I have a feeling that a woman might be a way better lover than any man could ever be, just because women are much more connected and sensual. I find myself being short and distant with my boyfriend because I need orgasms. Yes, I voiced my frustrations to him, but still, no sex. And I'm tired of feeling like I have to beg or negotiate to get fucked. And then I'm still not getting any. I wish I could masturbate, but I guess I just don't know how. And I'm so frustrated. It's starting to affect my daily life. Help.
Right. Oh,
who wants to go first?
There are so many things in that email.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say, I mean, there's a lot of angles to take this. It sounds like there's a lot that's going on in that relationship that is not about the sex. And because if she's articulating that she's really unsatisfied about their sex life and that that's not being heard and that's not being addressed, it sounds like there's some pretty systemic communication problems in that relationship as well that would need to be addressed. But I'm particularly intrigued by the piece around the fact that she wants orgasms, but is not willing to masturbate, or that masturbation is not working for her. That's very curious to me. And that would be one kind of piece of the puzzle that I would suggest that she explores. Cause I would imagine if she was more, I mean, you kind of have to tackle, it's a multifaceted problem. And I would imagine you'd have to start tackling it from somewhere. And I'd imagine that her orgasmic autonomy could kind of help her get some of those needs met, that if she was committed to staying in the relationship, could ease that pressure off a little bit so that she could then start, addressing some of these other problems in a more, you know, holistic, less sexually frustrated way.
Yeah. I'm curious about what she thinks has changed in the relationship. I know she said that a year ago they moved in together, which is a big change in a relationship. And having somebody constantly close can really change how you feel sexually about them, because when you're in a sort of a dating phase, it's like when you see each other, you're going out of your domestic context, you know, like it's likely you are, and it's a bit special. Whereas when you're living day to day together, it can kind of dilute some of that attraction, possibly because you're seeing them so frequently. That's possibly part of it, but I'm also wondering, like, maybe has something else changed? Like, I'm curious about what might have contributed to her boyfriend wanting to have less sex. Like, for example, has anything changed in his work circumstances, health circumstances, financial circumstances? Mm-hmm. And because that can have a real impact. And yeah, I guess I'm just curious about what's motivating his reduced interest in sex, because understanding that might help to them both getting their needs met better.
Yeah, the something that occurred to me as you were talking, Louise, is Esther Perel's approach to Absolutely. Desire and intimacy, and how Esther talks about how they're at opposite ends of the same spectrum. And if you have too much intimacy and too much closeness, then you don't have space for that heat and that desire to exist. And so then there's mm-hmm. zero erotic energy. And so I love that you pointed out how moving in together can really change the dynamics, because now instead of seeing each other kind of as a treat and having that wanting, it's just there all of the time, which can really shift the way that you experience each other, because now mm-hmm. it feels like there's no missing and no mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's an interesting space for her to just kind of reflect on. And I love what you said, Kate, about orgasmic autonomy. You know, it's so tough, and I don't think it's one or the other, but having a healthy sexual relationship with a partner, and healthy, of course, being like whatever works for you. So if you're right, asexual, right. then whatever that looks like. But, you know, having a sexual connection with your partner that meets your needs is so important. But at the same time, we also have to not require our partner to give us our pleasure and give us our orgasms. Like, it's not a burden we should be placing on them and then being angry and frustrated when they aren't able to do that. And so by being able to give herself those sexual outlets via masturbating or porn or reading erotica or writing erotica or whatever it is, so that she hasn't, I mean, I think her fantasies about men and women are perfectly healthy.
I'd agree, yeah.
If that's something that like helps her get off, she needs to meet that need for herself in some ways.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think having, it sounds like she's quite unsatisfied in a lot of ways, and those desires outside of her relationship like could be a little problematic for her. But I'd say that in general, like having desires outside of your relationship is not something that is inherently problematic in any way. And I get a lot of questions like that in my workshops and in my work, where people feel quite guilty about that, and that, mm-hmm. but that's so incredibly normal and something that so many people have shame about, but really needs to be just reframed as, regardless of whether you're in a monogamous relationship or an open relationship, it's just kind of part of being human to have those sort of desires, and that where the sort of ethical framework is around what your actual behaviors are and how those are in line with your actual relationship agreements.
It's really great that you mentioned Esther Perel, Dawn, because I was also going to suggest, yeah, reading Mating in Captivity is a great idea. And I was also going to add Dr. Sandra Patott's books,
mm-hmm.
So When Your Sex Drives Don't Match and Perfectly Normal, that they might not, they're not necessarily exactly going to encapsulate this situation, but they talk a lot about desire discordance and strategies to communicate around that. So those could be good resources for this person to explore.
Yeah, I love that you said strategies for communicating around this, because I think the tendency is, or I will say the things that I have done in the past is, you know, when I'm starting to feel really frustrated with something, and she says, you know, I find myself being short and distant with my boyfriend. So this is probably something that she's voiced over and over and over again. And so it's starting to feel a little bit like a broken record.
Right.
When you find ways to approach the conversation from a completely different angle with a completely different energy, often you'll get very different results.
Mm-hmm.
But it can take some experimenting. And so having tools that help you find different ways to have those conversations could be really helpful.
Absolutely.
Well, Hannah, I hope that was helpful for you. We'll have links to the books that were mentioned on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. So if you decide you want to check out one or all of the books to kind of help you get some new ideas so that maybe you can approach this a little bit differently or even just have some new conversations with your boyfriend, those will be available to you. And I wish you luck. Please report back if something interesting happens or if anything changes. I'd love to hear from you.
Good luck, Hannah.
Do we want to answer the question from the Virgin?
Go for it.
Yeah, let's try that.
Let's do it. Okay, so Rebecca wrote in and it says, "Hi, Dawn. I'm a 20-year-old female who's interested in men, and I've been following your podcast as a virgin in every sense of the word for over a year now. So I'm coming to you with some very exciting news and a lot of questions. Something I knew for myself was that I didn't want to have sex with someone unless we were in an exclusive relationship, especially since it would be my first time having sex. The guy that I've liked for over 3 years and I recently entered into an intense makeout session. I knew right away I didn't want to have sex, but I found a loophole. We did everything except have actual intercourse. When we were done, I realized that although we hadn't had true sex, in quotes, I had still lost my virginity. He was the first one to kiss me, make out with me, touch me, even finger me. It's suddenly really hard to keep calm and unclingy. For him, I was nothing new. He's had plenty of sex before me. So now that it's over, I'm feeling really lonely. I want more from him sexually and personally, which is the exact reason I didn't want to have sex with someone who I wasn't dating in the first place. But I really did enjoy our encounter, and I'm not sure if it will happen again. So I'm just wondering if you have some ideas on how I can make myself more healthy so that I won't have these negative emotions after sex. I'm really looking forward to having some fun exploring, so thanks for your advice and support." Oh.
So articulate about her experience.
I agree. Yeah. At 20, I don't think I would have been able to write that.
Great.
Yep. I think my first response is just that, and this is something that comes up a lot in the empathy work, is that people are often trying to avoid, quote, negative emotions. And, you know, and I would sort of challenge that I think that in my experience, being maximally mentally well is not about avoiding negative emotions. It's about being able to sit with them better and having better reflective self-care practices so that you can better manage, quote, negative feelings. So what I would encourage her to do is rather than avoiding those negative feelings, to just simply observe them and just collect data, just notice, okay, I'm noticing that when I have this experience, when I sexually engage with someone, I notice that I feel these things afterwards. And what do I need to do in the future in order to feel more emotionally safe when these feelings come up? What do I need afterwards in order to feel more supported, either from the person that I'm having the sexual exchange with or from the other people in my life, like from supportive friends or, you know, other networks of support, or personal solo self-care practices? What do I need in order to feel just in general more emotionally safe, and try to implement those things in a more comprehensive way?
Hmm. Yeah, because it can feel really frightening and out of control to have those, wanting attachment feelings, or being in like an oxytocin high where you just want to be with that person and you feel this kind of like instability that can be quite frightening and stressful. But it is just a feeling. And she's made the observation that the person that she had this encounter with is more sexually experienced, and she's observed how he's a bit more cool about it, and applying that same principle to her own future, she can probably expect that the intensity of that experience is likely to diminish as it becomes less of a new experience. She becomes more used to kind of the physical and emotional experience of being sexually intimate. It probably won't take such a roller coaster effect on her afterwards, I would imagine.
when I was 14 years old, I was a freshman in high school, and I had a crush on this guy who was a senior. And we ended up at a party together, and he ended up kissing me, like, for reals kiss. You know, I mean, before that, I'd had, like, little pecks with some of the boys that I liked. But it was the first time someone had genuinely kissed me with tongue and, like, had their body pressed against mine. I had such an intense physical response to that experience. Like, I wasn't expecting for my entire body to be flooded with sensation. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting, like, every inch of my skin to feel like it was on fire. And I had no idea that kissing would feel like that. And it was so overwhelming for me that I cried for, like, 2 days.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I was so scared of all the feelings. And then he felt terrible because I had this huge emotional reaction to it. And bless his heart, he was so sweet. We ended up dating for a couple of months, and he was amazing in every way. But, you know, I just had these, like, really intense feelings about it because it felt so big in my body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had similar experiences when I've had new sexual encounters, when I've tried, you know, something kinky for the first time, or when I have a lover who's done something that I've never done before, having those, like, great big emotions because things, I experience sensations so huge in my body. And then, you know, just knowing that, like, well, after I kissed a couple of people, even though it was still this amazing experience, it wasn't overwhelming for me anymore.
The newness of it can feel quite intense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's such a valuable perspective to bring, that sometimes when something is new, it can feel much more overwhelming. And even if it is still powerful in the future, the magnitude of it might be significantly more diminished in future encounters. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also with all sexual experiences, that reflective part is really important. So thinking after sexual experiences, you know, what did you like? What did you not so much like? What might you change? Perhaps that's going to be helpful for her, you know, like, not just for this first encounter, but ongoing through other encounters, to kind of improve your own sexual skills and your emotional management of sexual experiences and intimate experiences. Just kind of having that debrief with yourself, like, okay, so I'm going to be compassionate with myself. It was one of my first sexual experiences, so I couldn't have known better, but what might I do next time to feel a bit safer?
I wonder also about the role of having a more explicit conversation with her partners about what the terms of engagement are. You know, I think this is something that is a little bit more of a rarer skill set. I think it's more common in our community of, you know, kind of sex positive people who are more open communicatively, but just being much more explicit about, you know, what do we want out of this relationship? Like, is this a more casual thing, or is this something that is more leading into a more long-term kind of relationship? Because I think if you know the terms of engagement, it can, like, whatever that is, and making sure that you're on the same page, there can be a more of a emotional relaxation that can allow you to just in general feel more at ease with however it is that you're relating, that can turn down that intensity a little bit.
Yeah, I wish we lived in a world where, and maybe we will at some point, but I wish we lived in a world where it was normal and acceptable to tell someone that you're about to hook up with, I would really appreciate it if, you know, 2 days after this, you just check in with me and we can talk a little bit about, you know, how things went and what you enjoyed and what I enjoyed, just so they can still have that point of connection or whatever your request is. Because I feel like right now, so few people are at that level of communication that it would kind of come with the stigma of, like, oh, you're just trying to hang on, instead of, like, no, that's just genuinely would feel nice.
Right. That's just like being a respectful human being. I think that doesn't mean that you want to get married and have babies. Like, that
exactly.
just means that you're checking in about someone that you've had a lovely experience with. Like, that's just a kind human thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And if that's not available, then being able to have, like, a friend that you turn to just so that you can, like, download the experience and, like, share the feelings and just have someone be there that's receptive and can like go over all the details with you in a way that feels good. You know, those are all wonderful self-care techniques that make those kinds of feelings a lot more tolerable when you're not alone in them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else for Rebecca?
I think that's all from me.
Yep, all from me.
All right. Well, Rebecca, I want to say, first of all, congratulations, since you labeled it exciting news. Congratulations on your intense makeout session and on getting fingered and on having all these feelings, because now you've had the feelings, you can go do it again and find new ways to manage the feelings. So I hope that you do have fun exploring, and I hope that you report back and keep me posted on what's next for you, because it sounds like you're off to a great start.
Hope it all goes well, Rebecca.
Do we want the anal question, the kink question, or the best friend fantasy question next?
I kind of want the anal one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Louise wants the anal one.
Okay. Well, Pandora's Box wrote in the subject line.
That's great. That's fantastic. Oh.
Pandora's Box wrote in with a subject line of "My boyfriend is the MacGyver of sex." And it says, "Hi, Dawn. I've known my boyfriend since we were in middle school, and we hated each other back then. But we recently ran into each other again, and now we are happily dating. I eventually started to find out that he loves anal all the ways, both giving and receiving, and he also loves eating ass and all of that colorful shit," which, that's her phrasing, and I think that's kind of hysterical, but anyway. She says, "However, my first and only anal experience was when I was 16, and the guy slammed into me and caused some damage, so needless to say, I swore it off. However, I really care about my boyfriend, and I trust him completely. So what advice could you give me about anal sex and all those yummy bits that he likes? I know you have some podcasts on anal, but I would love a little help because I'm freaking out." So, butt stuff. We were just talking about butt stuff.
Right. Yeah. Challenging situation.
Yeah.
And it's so not rare that I hear people who have had unpleasant or somewhat traumatic first anal experiences. And that makes me really sad, because for many people, anal is a really pleasurable kind of sexual experience. But often early encounters, especially when people are a bit younger and haven't got the right kind of sex education about how to do it comfortably, means it can be really awful. So how about I'll give a few technical tips, and then we can hand over to you for some more of the kind of relational advice. But my technical tips are, take your time, you know, make sure you take plenty of time, both in terms of within one encounter, give yourself plenty of time to play, but then also time in terms of like multiple encounters of anal play, because it's going to probably take a while before it feels comfortable to insert, you know, bigger things. And if you want to have penis and anus sex, that's going to be definitely a build-up, psychologically building up that comfortability as well as the physical side. So taking time, using lube. The anus is not self-lubricating. So using lube, a silicon-based lube, is really nice for many people anally, but try out different ones and see what works for you. And I would say start with a finger, ideally your finger, which you have some control of so you can feel the sensations. And then if you want to move up to two fingers and some small toys, that's a great idea. Anal sensation or anal sexual exploration doesn't have to be about penis and anus sex. Anal play can involve, as she mentioned, rimming, you know, like tongue on anus. It can involve, yeah, fingers, toys, all sorts of fun activities. And the outside of the anus has lots of sensations. So you can kind of make sure you're really enjoying that external sensation before you try and go spelunking, as we call it, going on the inside. So yeah, that's just really my tips. And there are books like Tristan Taramino has a great guide to anal sex for women, mm-hmm. and that would be my recommended reading.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of reading too, I think that it can, when you're exploring anal play for the first time, I think it can also be nice to look at some erotica that features anal play in some ways, because I think you have the physicality of the anal play experience, but also the psychological element of it to kind of eroticize the experience, particularly when you've had a negative past experience. Because it sounds like this person's very open to having this new experience, and I think it could be quite fun and beneficial to be reading erotic narratives of anal play being really hot, and even just like reading sexy stories to her partner and incorporating that into sex play that may or may not feature actual anal play, but just to having the words and the language around what sexy anal play could look like. Rachel Kramer-Bussel has an anthology called, I think it's called Baby Got Back. That's just full of lots of sexy anal play stories that, could be quite fun to explore, but, that may be something to appeal to the mind as well as the bum.
Yeah, and I love so much that you mentioned, Louise, like the outside. I mean, playing with that area for me is one of the most pleasurable parts of anal, of just having anal massage and fingers and the teasing. And sometimes that's better than the actual penetration. I mean, it's just like so packed with sensation. And then it's also kind of like the mind fuck element a little bit. Of knowing what could be coming and, you know, how long is this going to last? And so there's all kinds of fun ways to play with anal in a way that doesn't have to feel invasive, and that doesn't have to, you don't have to be afraid it's going to hurt if you know that's just the kind of play you're going to be doing tonight. So you can fully relax into the experience, which is so important.
Can I add another couple of points about anatomy?
Yeah.
What I wanted to say is that often people think anal penetration has to hurt, like it's a necessary part of the process, like some kind of de-virginizing process. And that's not true at all. The, you know, well, some people might have a bit of eroticism around having some discomfort around penetration, but that's absolutely not something that has to be part of it. You can have very unpainful anal penetration, and that's all about building up and stuff. It's also about understanding anatomy. So what I wanted to mention is that there's two different rings of muscle. There's like the anus, the external sphincter, which you can kind of, you know, you can think that one open, you know, using your will, your mind power, you can be like, oh yep, open-y, close-y. Whereas a little bit further in, a little bit further in, there's a second ring of muscle which you don't have any voluntary control of. And that's what tends to cause pain and discomfort, is that people will sort of put a little bit of a finger or a little bit of something, you know, like a toy or penis in the beginning of their butt, and it feels really nice. But then once it gets a short way in, it hits that second ring of muscle, which spasms, and that causes a lot of pain. So having a good understanding of that anatomy and kind of what you're working with is really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say I've had really negative anal experiences, and for me, that was really stored as some trauma in my ass. Mm-hmm. And anal play was something that was really difficult for me to relax into. And so I started doing work around anal massage and playing with myself, since that was safe and I could control the situation. And as I started trusting the experience and trusting my body, and as I started really feeling pleasure with what my partner was doing, it helped me to rewrite that story. And so I hope that, Pandora, you can do something similar of completely letting go of that past experience and then creating all of these new, fresh, yummy memories with your boyfriend.
Absolutely. Good luck on your mission, Pandora.
Yeah. And really quickly, he likes receiving anal. So I just want to throw in there for Pandora that if you want to give to him, glove up. And as Louise said, use tons and tons and tons of lube. And just remember that it's all about going really slow and letting him tell you what his body is ready for, at his own pace. And if you are feeling really adventurous at any point and get yourself a strap on, I just want to say pegging can be really, really fun. So allow yourself the chance to explore that if he's open to it at some point, because it can be a really fun way to connect and also to kind of swap out gender roles a little bit and do a little bit of power play. So I think that can be a really fun place to go if at any point your butt starts to feel like it's a little bit off limits. Okay. Any other thoughts for Pandora's box on the butt stuff? Are we all butt stuff fans? I am. I talk about my butt all the time.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm hoping that's some helpful info for Pandora.
Yeah. And one last thing I just want to say is this episode's going to air afterwards, but I'm doing an Anal Sex 101 class online, and so I'm probably going to be running it again just after the new year. So Pandora, if you feel like you need more help where you can ask specific questions and you actually want to see examples of like toys and lubes and things like that, keep an eye out because my online webinar is going to feature all the nitty gritty and the ins and outs of anal.
Fat sex puns.
I was going to make a sex pun, Dawn, when you said, see if your boyfriend is open to anal. I was going to make an open joke, but I missed that boat, but I'm glad we had another anal pun. They're great.
I told you I'm terrible at intentional puns, but I unintentionally say them all the time. All right. I think we have time for one more. So Right. Do you want the kink one or Sure. The fantasizing about the best friend one? Or do you want the orgasm diabetes one?
Ooh. So many choices.
Over to you, Kate. You can make a decision on this one.
Let's do the kink one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Curious Kink wrote in with a message asking about kink, and it says, my girlfriend and I are having some issues. She is into kink, while I have never been in a relationship where that was a part of it. We've been together for 3.5 years, and there is a large age gap. She's 40 and I'm 25. So to get this thing started, she wants me to research and try out kink. I'm all for it, but she's afraid that I will get scared by what she's into. I'm pretty tough I'm pretty tough when it comes to just about everything. And I really just want to make sure she's happy, and I want to be happy. So I was wondering, what should I do? I've done a little research, watched porn, read some articles of all different sorts about different types of kink. But since she's older, she's had a lot more experiences in life with both men and women around kink, and I'm at a loss of what my actions should do to please her. I want to know that I'm doing it right, and I want to know that if I don't like doing it, she won't try and find it somewhere else. Any suggestions for getting started? Thanks for your help.
This is a great question. Ooh. I would say that, I mean, the first thing is, if she's been in a relationship with him for 3.5 years... she's probably pretty patient. You know, I mean, I think if it was the super, super urgent need for her, I would imagine that she would have been finding a partner in the kink community 3.5 years ago. So I'd imagine that, you know, that he can probably take a deep breath, that she's willing to let him learn and go a little bit slowly. And that, you know, it sounds like they're communicating really clearly and that this is something that can build over time. My first thought is also just about how they frame his upskill, right? Since obviously she's the more experienced partner and there's kind of like a power thing in that. And I think the idea of doing a sex lab would be something that I would really think would be super appealing to them. And I'm wondering, Louise, do you want to explain
Great
how to
idea.
Do that? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So a sex lab is when you designate a time and a specific activity you're going to work on to learn, basically to learn a new sex skill. Because often as adults, there's a lot of pressure to be sexually competent. And I think what I can hear with what Curious Kink is saying is that he's concerned about feeling kind of incompetent or fumbling or not really being hot. You know, she wants certain kind of hot kinky experience, and he might be feeling self-conscious about kind of going through the learning process of that. And a sex lab is a way you just designate a time and an activity. So, okay, this Saturday night, let's have a little play with, I don't know, spanking or something. And like any experiment, it may not be successful. So you check in as you go along. How's this going? How could this be different? And the emphasis is not on being super hot and competent. The emphasis is on being curious and learning and being willing to say, like, well, maybe that didn't kind of work out perfectly, and learning from that experience. So the idea being that when you do want to have kind of hot and heavy, competent, sexy sex, then you can bring those skills to the table, but you've also had that learning environment first. Is that a good description, Kate? What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on. Yeah. I think just in general, like as adults, you know, we have so much pressure to be super competent at everything right away. And I think that's just such a frustrating thing, because there's no absolute line where adulthood starts. And particularly with sexuality, because we're, you know, we're not taught these things, and you know, we're not given a comprehensive sexuality education that comprehensively prepares us for our adult sex lives. And inevitably we're going to be fumbling a little bit as we acquire these skills as grownups. And so I love this idea of a sex lab where you can kind of take the pressure off to be immediately expert at something. And it really is just this time and space to have curiosity be the goal, and really give yourself permission to upskill. And particularly with something like kink, where there's like a technical element as well as a psychological element, and feeling out how each partner reacts to certain kinds of stimuli can be a really useful framework for building that up and feeling more comfortable with something new.
Mm. I'm also curious what kind of kink she's into, because it sounds like maybe he's feeling a little overwhelmed, like, because she's brought kink onto the table and he's like, I've got to learn about spanking and rope and different kinds of power dynamics, and perhaps he's not getting the precision that could be helpful for him. You know, if she was to say, like, this is something that I really like to try, and I'm not sure if this is a situation where she wants him to be dominant or submissive, or, you know, those kind of things, like not knowing kind of what's on the cards can be quite stressful.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, because, you know, as as you tumble into the vast world of kink and you start to realize that there's literally endless options for how kink can be played out and experienced, it can feel really overwhelming, especially if you feel like you have to learn multiple things at once.
Yes, absolutely.
And so finding ways to like really zero in on specifically what is she most interested in and starting there, but also staying open to learning about kink that maybe she's not interested in or hasn't mentioned, because maybe curious kink is going to find that his girlfriend is really into rope and impact play, but maybe he finds that he's into humiliation. And so, you know, granting the permission for him to have an experience that's separate from hers of kink, and just all of the delicious ways that kink can really be. And I love the sex lab idea, because I think the scariest thing about kink is when you usually meet someone who's into it, they already have so much experience, it feels like there's no way you can ever possibly catch up.
Right.
And so finding ways to get those skills, either doing a sex lab at home or going to workshops in your local kink community, can be a really fantastic way to learn. I mean, for me, so many kink skills require hands-on learning. Like I never ever would have tried throwing a single tail whip on my own at home. Like I just never would have. But I saw some friends doing it, and I got to experience it and see what it felt like. And then he volunteered to not only use it on me, but teach me how to throw it. And so he was able to like position my hand and my arm, and I was doing it on a wall. And so it felt really safe because I wasn't going to hurt anyone. And so for me, so much of kink is actually needing someone to position my body, or to show me how to do the tie, or, you know, to show me the different ways that I can throw something. And so being able to either be in an in-person class or to do something like kinkacademy.com, where you have access to like 1,400 how-to videos from all the world's leading kinksters, you know, that can be another way to feel like you're upping your game and your skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and there are some book resources like Tristan Taramino's Ultimate Guide to Kink that can be a good mm-hmm. place to start as well. And there's the Book of Topping and the Book of Bottoming. Is it? What's the title exactly?
By Dossie Easton.
By Dossie Easton, exactly. Those three books would be a really great place to start as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know if humiliation is at all on the table, Princess Callie just came out with her erotic humiliation game or book, mm-hmm. Enough to Make You Blush. And if submission or dominance is a part of it, Sinclair Sexsmith runs online workshops all about dominance and submission. Idea. So there's tons of amazing resources out there. And Sinclair and Princess Callie have both been on the show. So hopefully Curious Kink at least has those resources. But yeah, I think like for me, the number one takeaway around this is, one, she's with you for a reason.
Absolutely.
And she's not going to expect you to be amazing at all the kink things right away, because she clearly cares about Curious Kink. And then also like doing these sex labs, that sounds so fun to me, like an opportunity to be bad at something but in a planned way. That sounds great. I can fail and like my ego doesn't have to be on the line because we planned for this failure, so it's okay.
Sex labs are so much fun.
They are so much fun. But I was going to say, like, also, even if you've got the two, like, most competent, kinky people who have done everything before, there's always going to be a process of learning a new partner, whether that happens quickly or slowly. And a sex lab context is just a place where you can kind of try things out and say, oh, hey, you know, is this hot for you? Like, you know, is being called a slut something you want? Or is that something that's really unhot for you? Like having those discussions is going to be really important, like, regardless of a person's level of skill or experience. So, yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what you just brought up, Louise, is so important of like, even if you have super, super advanced, experienced kinksters, there's still that period of negotiation and trying mm-hmm. to get to know, like, how are we going to play? Because the way I play with my last partner could be totally different from the way that you like to play. And so just having the skills of being able to ask really good questions and to negotiate, that's going to get you so much farther than knowing mm-hmm. how to do a couple knots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I hope, Curious Kink, that you find a way to make this learning experience something that's really fun for not only you, but for the both of you, and to use it as an opportunity to like bond and to create new memories together versus something that feels like a point of stress or a burden that you know, feel like you have to play catch up or something like that. So hopefully Louise and Kate's suggestions will help you to reframe this as an opportunity for something really awesome versus something to be super scared of and kind of like this point of disconnection. So good luck in all the kink stuff, because there's so much fun.
Good luck, Curious. Yay. Mm.
Okay, well, we are at the end of our hour, and we answered some awesome questions from some listeners. So, Louise, I want to start with you. How can people stay in touch with you if they want to find out about workshops you're doing or just what's going on, and where can they find you?
I would love people to stay in touch with me. I can be found at louisebaucher.com. We'll put the link somewhere because my name is not completely phonetic in its spelling. My last name is B-O-U-R-C-H-I-E-R. So my website's louisebaucher.com. And on Twitter and Instagram, I'm Louise Labouche, which just is a little bit of a nod to my French speakingness, which is another feather in my cap. But it's that means Louise the mouth in French. So Louise, L-A-B-O-U-C-H-E on Instagram and Twitter.
And Kate, how can people find you and stay in touch?
Yeah, I am I'm at katemccombs.com, which is where you can sign up for my newsletter and read my blogs and see where I am in the world and read more about tea and empathy and all that sort of thing. And on Twitter, I am katecom, K-A-T-E-C-O-M. And on Instagram, I am Kate Answers.
I will have all of the links to all of the things that Louise and Kate just mentioned on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. I just want to take a quick moment to thank the two of you for joining me all the way from New Zealand to help field all these delicious questions.
Oh, so my pleasure, Dawn. It's so delightful to be here. And so I love getting interviewed with Louise. This is something that we've been teaching together for 5 years now, but it's been recent that we've been getting interviewed together, and it's like getting to teach with her, but like, you know, different and fun and casual. And it's fantastic.
In bed.
In bed, I know.
Well, Kate's in a bed. I'm in a desk, but that's a whole other story. Yeah, thank you so much for having us, Dawn. It's been so good talking to you, and so good for us both to be on here together. And to, it's been really, really fun. I'm so glad we made this happen. Thanks for having us.
Me too. And I want to thank all of our listeners who wrote in and also who tuned in and listened. Of course, if you have your own questions or comments, you can write to me. Just head to sexgetsreal.com. There's a contact form where you can submit questions either anonymously or share your information if you want to reply. Be sure to follow Sex Gets Real on Twitter and Facebook at Sex Gets Real. And I will be talking to you next week. So this is Dawn Sarah. Until then, bye.